Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Megillah is daf Chaf Gimel. Yesterday we were able to catch up a little bit to where we should be. We got up to the correct daf, and then we're starting today on the bottom of Chaf Beis Amud Beis, and we are going to be exploring different ways of bowing down. We thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf of Bilona Zecher Nishmas Lois Lupin Zaltzman. The discussion that we had yesterday in the Gemara was two unusual things that Rav did as he visited Bavel. He went to Bavel, was a town in Sibor, and as such he got an aliyah because they were learning the Torah. Remember the Gemara got into this discussion and this little anecdote because the Gemara wanted to know in a town in Sibor how many aliyahs are there? Are there three aliyahs or are there four aliyahs? It's not mentioned in the Mishnah. The Mishnah mentions more or less every other occasion that there's laning. And what should be done? How many aliyahs are there for those days of laning? But the Mishnah doesn't mention Tanit Sibor. How many aliyahs should there be in a Tanit Sibor? So the Gemara tells us anecdotally that Rav went to Bavel on a Tanit Sibor and he got an aliyah. And the Gemara doesn't say exactly how many aliyahs were there. But basically, what we tried to do was we tried to investigate and put together some clues and perhaps arrive at a conclusion in terms of how many aliyahs there must have been when Rav got his aliyah. And to be honest with you, after the Gemara, after all said and done, we're still unsure, inconclusive whether or not there were three or four aliyahs. But the Gemara's conclusion, however, on the whole topic was, Tanit Sibor, there are going to be three aliyahs, right? Tisha B'Av is coming up, so Tuesday morning, so there are going to be three aliyahs. Okay, so that's the conclusion. And there was a second part of the incident as well, which is that everyone put their head down for Tachna. Now, put their head down isn't exactly a fair description of what they did, as I mentioned before. For Tachna, they would bow down totally. And as the Gemara pointed out, Rav's practice was to even go further. Pishi Adam Raglaim, he would spread his hands and his feet on the floor. In other words, he'd go flush with the floor. And the Gemara then wanted to know why, when Rav went to Bavel, so on the Tanit Sibor, how come he didn't say Tachna? Because another thing that was reported by Rav is that he didn't say Tachna, or he didn't put his head down, or he didn't go down. So why not? So the Gemara gave a number of suggestions in terms of why he didn't go down, and that's what we did yesterday. And as long as we're on the topic of bowing, so the Gemara is going to take us just for a couple of lines. We're starting on the bottom, towards the bottom of Beis Amud Beis, and the Gemara is going to take us now through a couple of lines of just a description of different forms of bowing. Okay. Tanur Rabbanan. Okay, it's about six lines from the bottom of the Amud on Chav Beis Amud Beis. So Kida, so there are going to be different descriptions of different types of bowing, so now we're going to be describing Kida. Kida al Apayim. So whenever we describe the word Kida, so that is al Apayim. It's on your face. Shenemar v'tikor v'sheva Apayim aretz. Batsheva bowed down on her face, and Rashi points out that the key word over here is the word aretz, meaning that her face was basically on the ground. So she bowed down. Kriya al berkayim. Whenever kriya is mentioned, the kriya is on your knees. So shevichenu omer machra al berkav. And hishtachava, and the third type of bowing is upishi yadam v'aglayim. That is where you are flush with the floor. Your arms and your legs are spread out, and basically you are parallel with the floor. That is hishtachava yishenemer havanavo ani v'imech v'echicha lihishtachava slach artza. So again, the word artsa, but over here, obviously, it's a more intensified form of bowing down, as basically you're totally parallel and flush with the floor. Okay, so three different types of bowings. And when you see come up in Tanakh, now we have a good visualization in terms of these three different types. Levi achva kida kame de Rebbe. Levi attempted to do kida in front of Rebbe. Okay, if you take a look at Rashi over here, Achva Kida, so Rashi over here tries to give us a visual of what exactly Kida would look like. So I'm reading from Rashi, it's the fourth last line on the Amud. No, it's God love, Vinishan Alehim. So what he did is he pressed his thumbs into the ground and he applied his weight to it. Basically, the way I would visualize it is kind of like a push-up, but just with your thumbs. Vishocha Acha no shake es aritzpa. And basically, you allow yourself to go all the way down until you kiss the floor, the zokev. And then what you do with your thumbs is you push yourself back up. Okay, so it obviously requires tremendous arm strength, tremendous chest strength, in order to be able to go all the way down to the floor, kiss the floor, and push yourself back up, all with just your thumbs as being the force, or all the pressure is going on your thumbs. And now Rashi points out, now what happened with Levi? Levi attempted to do this. And his arms weren't strong enough. His thumbs weren't strong enough. And so as he tried to get back up from this position of Kedah, so because he didn't have enough arm strength, so he basically threw his hips into it. And he threw his hips into it and he threw it out. And Rashi basically says, now basically what happened to him is some sort of dislocation, and he was unable to walk. He becomes lame after doing Kida in front of Rebbe. So Vahaka Garmale, so the Gemara says, okay. So we have now an explanation in terms of why Levi was lame. Levi could not walk, so the Gemara says, because he attempted to show off Kida in front of Rebbe. The Gemara points out, Amar Rebbe Lazar, Lola Ma'itech Adam Dvarim Kapi Mala. The Gemara says, but wait a second, there's another explanation in terms of why he becomes lame, and that is based on a Gemara that we didn't tell this really not that long ago. Shari Adam Gadol Itech Dvarim Kapi Mala. The Gemara says, be very careful in the way you speak to Kadosh Baruch Hu, because there was an individual who was not careful about the way he spoke to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Itech Dvarim Kapi Mala. He spoke in an insubordinate fashion. Vi'itla. And he becomes lame. Umana, now this individual is Levi. So you remember the Gemara Tanis, Rashi over here cites it briefly, where he turns to Kadosh Baruch Hu and he says, Kadosh Baruch Hu, it seems like you're up there in Shemayim and you're not taking care of your children. Right? There was a lack of rain and he was davening for rain, but in his davening for rain, he was a little over aggressive in the way he davened. Now the truth of the matter is, if you remember back in Tanis, we also had Choni Amagel, who was also a little bit aggressive in the way he davened, but the Gemara over here points to Levi as being somebody who really spoke insubordinately. And oh, by the way, by Choni Amagel, the Gemara there as well wasn't excited about the way he spoke to Kadosh Baruch Hu as well. But remember, by Choni Amagel, they said that Il Malik Choni Amagel, if had you been Choni Amagel, we would have put you in Cherem. But okay, so but anyway, Levi spoke with insubordination towards the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and that's why he becomes lame. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Chiya, sorry, I skipped an important line, Hava HaGarmalei. So the Gemara says, both are causatives. Both are causatives. Rashi writes, Lefishi Itiach Niskalkel Bishas HaSakana. What happens is as follows. He spoke in a very disrespectful manner to Kadosh Baruch Hu. So now basically, he's got a chov against him. Now, when does the Kadosh Baruch Hu extract chov? In a time where there's where you're fragile, where you're delicate, right, when you're in an exposed moment. So now when Levi demonstrates Kida in front of Rebbe, so now he puts himself in a compromised position, so Kadosh Baruch Hu at that point in time extracts the Chov. Just very similarly, it just comes to my mind, but similarly we have this by the Mishnah Shabbos. Mishnah Shabbos says that a woman who's not careful about the mitzvahs of Neiros and Nida and Hafreshes Chala, so she's gonna have a hard, let's say like the Mishnah says it, she'll die during childbirth. So during childbirth, why? So again, it's the same basic idea, meaning that once she's not careful in the mitzvah, now she has a chov against her. And when does the Kadosh Baruch Hu extract the chov? At a time where she is in a very fragile state. So same thing over here with Levi. So Levi had a chov against him, and then when he's doing Kida, so at that point in time, Kadosh Baruch Hu extracts. Amar Chia Baravin Chazin Alahu La'abaye Barava Demat La'atzluye. One last thing about Tachanun. And Rabbi Chia Bar Avin reports that I saw Abaye and Rava, and they were Matzle Atzluya. If you take a look at that first Rashi in Chav Gimel Amud Aleph, so Rashi says, Matzle Atzluya Al Tzidehem, they would lean to the side, V'lo Noflim Al Pnei Mamish, they would not put their face on the ground, L'fishi and Adam Chashav Rashai Li Paul Panav, because Adam Chashav, because of the way Rashi understands the Gemara, they were significant people, Abaye and Rava, they were the leaders of the generation, and it's just not appropriate that they should be putting their face on the ground. Okay, so that ends the Gemara's discussion about Tachanun. So we had a very brief discussion of Tachanun in terms of the way it was done, why some people avoided doing it the way it was once upon a time done. What do we do nowadays? We all understand, we all know what the minhag is nowadays, is that we don't put our face on the ground, we put our face on the arm, and why don't we put it all the way down on the ground? So it could be based on the Gemara that we saw yesterday, a couple of explanations. Could be that it's a stone floor, and as we learned in yesterday's daf, you can't bow down on a stone floor. Other than the Beis HaMikdash, you're not allowed to bow down on the stone floor. So it could be that that's why we put our heads on our arm and don't push it down to all the way down to the floor. And also the halacha requires that when you are putting on your arm, there should be something on your arm, meaning it should be a sleeve, but if you don't have a sleeve, you should have something on your arm. Some people take their tefillin bag and put it on their arm. And why? Because again, because the whole point over here is that you don't want to be flush with the floor, you don't want to be facing the floor, so that's why you have something something separating your head from the floor. Your arm itself is unacceptable because it's part of your body, and as we've seen a number of times, your body itself cannot be a chatzitza for you. Okay, so anyway, but that very briefly, just but we spoke about tachanun, so just a couple of very brief words. Back to the aliyahs. Okay, what we learned back in the Mishnah, going back to Chafal Faman Aleph, is that based on the degree of sanctity of the day, so that is going to express itself with how many aliyahs there are. So on a regular Shabbos afternoon, Monday, Thursday, 3 aliyahs. Chol HaMoed and Rosh Chodesh, 4 aliyahs. Yontov is 5 aliyahs. Yom Kippur, 6 aliyahs. And Shabbos is 7 aliyahs. As you keep moving up, so we're going to keep adding one more aliyah. That's what we learned back in the Mishnah. The Gemara now points out, we're on the top of Chav Gimel Amud Aleph. So Masisa Mani Lo Rebbe Shmuel Lo Rebbe Akiva. Our Mishnah follows like what seems to be no opinion. Meaning, the Tanya, the Gemara introduces us to a Braisa, B'yom Tov, Chamisha, V'yom HaKippurim, Shisha, V'Shabbos, Shiva. So far, so good. This opinion in the Braisa is identical to our Mishnah. Ein po chasam nehem ve'ein mosif in aleim. Here's the problem. Div Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel, in this Braisa, says that you can't subtract, nor can you add. So Rabbi Shmuel in this Braisa does not allow for osafos. In our Mishnah, we learned that on Shabbos, you can make osafos. Debatable about Yontif, but on Shabbos you could do Osafos. Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Yom Tov, Chamisha, Yom Kippur, Shiva, V'Shabbos, Shisha. Rabbi Kiva, so he switches. On Yontif there are 5 aliyahs, on Yom Kippur there's 7 aliyahs, and on Shabbos there's 6 aliyahs. Interesting, we have to think about why exactly Yom Kippur and Shabbos switch for him. But anyway, but Rabbi Kiva has the numbers, switch for Shabbos and Yom Kippur. Ein po chasamim, aval mosifin aleihem. Now you can't do less, but you can add. You can make hosafos. The problem right now should be obvious, and that is our Mishnah seems to be following neither opinion. Mani, Rabbi Shmuel, Kashi Tosefesi, Rabbi Kiva, Kashi Shisha V'Shiva. So if our Mishnah is expressing the viewpoint of Rabbi Shmuel, so here's the problem. The problem is that according to Rabbi Shmuel, there are Rabbi Shmuel of Abraisa mentions no hosafos. It doesn't allow for hosafos, and meanwhile our Mishnah does. And Rabbi Akiva, the problem is just as obvious. Rabbi Akiva has Yom Kippur being 7 aliyahs and Shabbos being 6 aliyahs, and our Mishnah does the opposite. So Amar Rava, Tana Debe Rabbi Shmali. So Rava says, okay, if the choice is not A or B, so we're going to go with choice C. What is choice C? Well, so we're going to see another Braisa. Tana Debe Rabbi Shmali, B'yom Tov, Chamisha B'yom HaKippurim, Shisha B'Shabbos Sheva. So here in this Braisa, Rabbi Shmali has 5, 6, and 7 for Yom Tov, Yom Kippur, and Shabbos, respectively. Ein po chasam mehem, aval mosif in aleihem. No less, but you can make hosafos. Div Rabbi Yishmael. So that is the words of Rabbi Yishmael. Okay, good. So we have now a braisa, which aligns perfectly with our Mishnah. Now this introduces us to another problem. And that is that Rabbi Yishmael is going against Rabbi Yishmael. Kashi to Rabbi Yishmael, to Rabbi Yishmael, trei tanai, libet to Rabbi Yishmael. Okay, so the Gemara says there are various reports in terms of what exactly is the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel, but we have now the most recent Braisa, which is totally in alignment with our Mishnah, that it's 5, 6, and 7 for Yontov, Yom Kippur, and Shabbos, respectively. Good. Mantan lahadetanya. Now the Gemara quotes now another Braisa. And this Braisa over here, the Gemara is going to ask it as a question. I'll explain the question momentarily. But basically this Braisa is, when should you start davening? So b'yomtov ma'achrin lavo ma'marin latzei. So on Yontov, so davening should start later on Yontov. We're talking about Yontov morning. So davening should start later. Ma'marin latzei. And the braisa says you should make it quick, right? In other words, let's not say rush, but in other words, no schlepping. For Yontov. Why start shul later and why get home earlier? So if you take a look at Rashi over here. Rashi gives an explanation. B'yomtov ma'achrin lavo lebeis haknesses should sarich letroch b'studas yomtov kach ma'mfarish b'masechet sofrim. So on yomtov you're allowed to cook. There are food preparations. So the yomtov morning. So you run off to shul, but you got food preparation. Now it's interesting. Okay, right. I'm a little more of a traditionalist, but why can't we have the men going to shul and the women preparing? It's pretty clear from Rashi that no, the men also participate in the preparation. Okay, so to one degree or another. In other words, I can easily envision. Remember, back then, one of the food preparations is allowed in Yom Tov is Shechita. So the men in the morning are shechting the animal and cleaning out the animal. Okay, so however they involve themselves in the preparation, so therefore shul and yantav should start a little bit later to allow for food preparation. And then why I don't want to say rush through shul. I got to find a better way to say it. But right, why? Thank you. That's much better. So why expedite the davening? Why are we so excited to get home? So Rashi points out because we're going to eat. So Rashi says, "Mamar Latzis Mishum Simchas Yantiv." Good, because we have a wonderful Yantiv meal waiting for us, and so therefore we're excited. Good. Yom Kippur Mamar Lavo Ma'achin Latzis. Now in Yom Kippur, it's the exact opposite in both directions, meaning go to shul early and linger, and there's no rush, and there's no pressure. So and there, for obvious reasons, there's no food preparation in Yom Kippur. We're not rushing to get home to eat. There's nothing to eat. Good. So Yom Kippur, so basically, spend the day in shul. Or with Shabbos, Mamar Lavo, Mamar Latzes. And on Shabbos, the Ashkama menu would love this. On Shabbos, Mamar Lavo, so Shabbos you come in early, meaning because there's no food preparation at Shabbos. All the food preparation was done already, so there's nothing to prepare. And then, Mamar Latzes. But at the same time also, you want to go through the davening, you want to expedite yourself through the davening so that you get home. Shabbos meal, I'll make Shabbos. Good. Adkan. That is the end of the Braisa. Good. Braisa is wonderful. The Gemara at this point in time thinks that this is a problem. Why? Lema Rabbi Akiva Yidis, like Avi Seira. The Gemara feels that this Braisa is authored by Rabbi Akiva. Why? I mean, it's funny. We make fun a little bit of the Yekis about the German Jews because they're so punctilious and they're so on the clock. Meanwhile, the Gemara says, you know, this Braisa has got to be Rabbi Akiva. You know why? Because Rabbi Akiva on Yom Kippur, he has an extra aliyah. Oh, that accounts for the Braisa saying that in Yom Kippur you're going to go to shul early and you're not going to rush to come home. Oh, it must be because there's an extra aliyah. Right, because according to Rabbi Akiva, 6 on Shabbos, 7 on Yom Kippur. So that must account for the extra time we're spending in shul. One extra aliyah. So the Gemara says, "Afilu tam Rabbi Shmuel, didaf shidur diyoma." So the Gemara says, "No, not exactly." Meaning that the author of the Braisa doesn't have to be Rabbi Akiva; it can be Rabbi Shmuel. And the Gemara says, and I'm sure this was all very intuitive, and I think we would have guessed this anyway, but the davening Yom Kippur is just longer. And not the explanation of a longer davening Yom Kippur is not an additional aliyah, but just simply because we have vidui, avoda, it's special Shemoneh Esrei, meaning, okay, so the davening is just simply longer in Yom Kippur. That's all. Okay. Hani shlosha chamisha v'shiva keneged mi. Okay, so we have now our numbers for aliyahs are either 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. The Gemara now is about to ask, what is the significance of the three aliyahs, of five aliyahs, of seven aliyahs. Now, what's conspicuously absent from the question of the Gemara is, what about the number 4 and what about the number 6? Okay, fair. So, Tosfos points out, well, as far as 6 is concerned, stay tuned, the Gemara is going to discuss 6. Meaning, Yom Kippur 6 aliyahs, the Gemara is going to discuss that a little bit later. Tosfos says, the Gemara is going to just ignore 4. Meaning, on Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed, there are 4 aliyahs. The Gemara right now is going to ignore it. Why is the Gemara going to ignore it? So if you take a look at Tosfos over here, it is the top Tosfos on Chav Gimel Amud Aleph. He writes about Mishisha Shiyam Kippurim Labai Ad Lakaman. Okay, so 6 the Gemara is going to ask later on. But Kasha Amai Labai Midalad Shorosh Chodesh Keneged Mi V'chein Shecholosh Amaleid. But Tosfos asks, why isn't the Gemara going to ask about 4 and the significance of 4 aliyahs on Chol HaMoed and Rosh Chodesh? Yishlam Etikim Leitayim Ad Musav Chashav L'Tifui Echad Gavra. So Tosfos says, look, for Chol HaMoed and Rosh Chodesh, we already have the explanation. We already know why. Because on Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed, Karban Musaf. Karban Musaf means it's a more special day. So on the baseline of number of aliyahs is 3, and therefore we have a Karban Musaf. So good, we're going to attack on one more, so it'll be 4 aliyahs. Okay, but Tosfos then goes on to say, but now in Yom Tov we have 5, and in Yom Kippur we have 6, and on Shabbos we have 7. And what's the compelling reason? there's Musaf on Shabbos, but so is there on Chol HaMoed. So what's the compelling reason? And Tosus writes, it's not enough just to say, well, Yom Kippur is an Issa Karis, and Shabbos it's an Issa Skila, which is, by the way, what the Gemara said yesterday. But what Tosus is explaining, our Gemara is saying, is that's not enough. We need another reason or another, just another explanation in terms of why add another one for Yontif, another one for Yom Kippur, and another one for Shabbos. That's what the Gemara is doing right now. So Shosha Chamisha Veshiva Keneged Mipli Gebar Rabbi Yisrael Bar Nachmeni V'Chad Damei Man Rabbi Shimon Ben Pazi. So it's a debate between Rabbi Yitzchak ben Nachmeni and Rabbi Shimon Pazi, and the Gemara is just going to give us another way of making the same, setting us up in the same with the same Amoraim. V'Amrila Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi V'Chad Damei Uman Rabbi Yitzchak ben Nachmeni V'Amrila. The Gemara is the third version of who said this. Rabbi Shimon ben Nachmeni Chad. I'm sorry. V'Amrila Shimon ben Nachmeni. Again, the Gemara tries its best to present the positions as accurately as possible. Chad Amar Keneged Birchas Kohanim. So one explanation is Birchas Kohanim. Kohanim bless the people. Three psukim, and your numbers for today are 3, 5, and 7. In the first pasuk, Yivrechacha Hashem Yishmerecha, that's 3. Second pasuk has 5 words, and the third pasuk has 7 words. Okay, so at least we see that when the Kohanim are giving a bracha, so it comes in the numbers of 3, 5, and 7. So we see that there's significance to 3, 5, and 7. Okay, obviously, you can dig much deeper into the Gemara over here in terms of trying to relate the 5 to Yontov and the 7 to Shabbos. And you're right, you got it right. Obviously, all we're doing is just literally scratching the surface in terms of why these are significant towards the number of aliyahs. The Charama Keneged Shlosha Shomrei Asaf Chamisha Meiroa Pnei Hamelech Shiva Roei Pnei Hamelech. And then the Gemara points out that the other opinion is that the numbers 3, 5, and 7 are significant because the king, we find throughout Tanakh, the king is flanked by sometimes 3 advisors, sometimes 5 advisors, sometimes 7 advisors. So you see that when dealing with royalty, the numbers are 3, 5, and 7. We're talking about Yontov and Shabbos, and so these are days of royalty and dignity, so therefore that's why 5 and 7 become now significant. Interesting, if you take a look at Rashi over here, Rashi says, where in Tanakh do we see that royalty is flanked by 7? Look at this Rashi, it is interesting. Rashi says, Shiva Em Kedichsiv, Shiva Sarei Parasu Madai. So Rashi says, Achashverosh was flanked by 7 advisors, 7 ministers, and so you see that royalty is flanked sometimes by 7. Tosus over here is a little astounded by Rashi, because essentially what Rashi, the place that Rashi points to is, yes, royalty is flanked by 7, Achashverosh. Achashverosh is being a model in terms of how many aliyahs we have on Shabbos. So Tosus has a very difficult time with this Rashi. Tosus cites another place in Tanakh where we see that royalty was flanked by 7. Okay, Tani Rav Yosef Gimel Chamisha V'Shiva Shlosha Shomrei Asaf Chamisha Meirei Pnei Hamelech Shiva Ro'ei Pnei Hamelech. Okay, so Rav Yosef taught this as well, that we find in Tanakh that royalty is flanked by sometimes 3, sometimes 5, sometimes 7. Amalei Abaye Ad Ha'idna Maitam Lo Parishlan Mar. So Abaye, the student of Rav Yosef, turns to his Rebbe and says to his Rebbe, this is the first time I'm hearing this from you. Right? I've been your Talmud for years. Right? I've been learning from you for years, and this is the first time I heard this from you. So Amalei Lo'avi Adina Dizrichulusalei. So Rav Yosef says, okay, classic case of miscommunication. I didn't know you didn't know this. And Umi Ba'isa Minai Milsav Lo Amri L'chum. Like, if you would have asked me, I for sure would have told you. In other words, I assumed that you know this. I didn't know you didn't know this. And, okay, moving along. Amar Le Yaakov Mina L'Rav Yehuda. Rav Yaakov Mina asks the following question, or makes a statement to Rav Yehuda. Now, usually the word Mina means a men or a heretic. Tosos over here. Tosos over here wants to avoid that. In other words, they're having a regular halachic discussion. So Tosos has a hard time accepting that over here. He's an actual min. He's an actual heretic. Okay. So Rav Yaakov Mina le Rav Yehuda, Hani Shishad Yom Kippur Keneged Mi. So far we explained 3. We explained 5. We explained 7. Not explained, but gave additional reasons why the significance of 3, 5, and 7. And now, what about the 6 of Yom Kippur? So, Amar Leik, Negashisha Shamdu Mi Yeminu Shal Ezra, Vishisha Mi Smolo. six to the right of Ezra, six to the left of Ezra. And again, the basic idea is that you see that this is cover, this is honor. Right? When you are being flanked, and the number of people that you're being flanked with, Ezra over here being the leader of the Jewish people, being flanked six on each side. So you see six also has a significant number, and it's related to machlus, it's related to royalty and dignitary. The Gemara quotes a pasuk from Sefer Nechemesh, Shenemar, Ve'yamod Ezra Asofar al-Migdal Eitz, Asher Asu L'daber Ve'yamod Eflo, and who stood next to Ezra as he was speaking? So, Matisah V'shem Abaniya V'aruya V'chalkiyah Masiyah Al-Yemino, someone is right, the pasuk in Nechemesh mentioned six to his right, U'mismolo, Pidiyo Mishael Malkaya V'chashum V'chashbadna, Zechariah Mishalem, or Mishulam. So they, and then gives a list of seven to his left. Now we didn't expect the number to be seven, meaning the way that this was introduced to us, it was going to be six to the right and six to the left, and meanwhile the pasuk actually has seven to the left. And the Gemara notes that right away, Hani Shiva, Havu, Hanu Zechariah, Hanu Mishulam. So the Gemara gives an answer which we're very used to at this point, especially in this Masechta, is that Zechariah went by two names. He went by Zechariah and he went by Mishulam. In fact, if you look really carefully at the psukim, every name is introduced with a vav in the beginning, right? In other words, Pedaya, Umishael, Umalkaya, and then when you get to Zechariah and Mishulam, it doesn't say Umishulam. So, truth of the matter is a critical reading of the pasuk actually indicates that Zechariah and Mishulam are really the same person. And the Gemara says, and Zechariah went by the nickname Mishulam because he was complete. He was perfected. Rashi says, "Tamim b'ma'asav." Right? He was he was not only Talmud Chacham, but behaved, perfected his midos. Tanu Rabbanan. Okay, up until now, basically, what we've done over the course of today's daf is we've gone over now the numbers. Right? We basically reviewed the Mishnah 3-4a for a laning on Shabbos afternoon, Monday and Thursday. 4 Chol Hamoed Rosh Chodesh, 5 Yontif, 6 Yom Kippur, 7 Shabbos, and we have given supplementary reasons in our Gemara over the course of today. Okay, now, who is going to get an Aliyah? Next topic of discussion, Tanu Rabbanan. HaKol Ola L'Minyan Shiva. So everyone can get an Aliyah, V'afilo Kadim V'afilo Isha, even a minor and even a woman. Ava Amru Chachamim Isha Lo Tikra B'Torah. But the Chachamim said a woman shouldn't read the Torah. Remember, we pointed this out before, that in the good old days, so the person who got the Ola also was the one who read from the Torah. So the nowadays, for however many years going backwards, we have Baal Koreh, who's going to read. But fundamentally, it's the Ola's responsibility to read from the Torah. So the Gemara is pointing out that if the woman got the Aliyah, so what's going to happen is she's going to do Kriyas the Torah. And the Gemara says, and no, because they covered at Sibur. Because it's not covered at Sibur. Now Rashi and Tosfos over here don't give an explanation of what that means, meaning why is it a lack of covered at Sibur to have a woman read from the Torah, but the other Rishonim, the Ritva, basically points out that because it's really fundamentally the man's obligation to read the Torah, and now what you're going to have is a situation where it's fundamentally a man's responsibility, and he's abdicating his fundamental responsibility, and it's taken up by someone who is not fundamentally responsible to be learning Torah. So that's why it's a lack of covered Torah. We have this idea, we saw this idea back in Sukkah as well. Right? Remember the Mishnah in Sukkah? Mishnah in Sukkah says, right, you can't bench, so what's going to happen? So your wife will bench for you, right? Or your child will bench for you. So and the Mishnah says already that, basically shame on you. Meaning that you are not educated enough where you're going to have somebody who's going to be doing it for you who's not as fundamentally obligated as you are. So basically, similar story over here. Meaning it's fundamentally the man's responsibility, and by having a woman go up there and read, it's going to really show that the man has abdicated his fundamental responsibility. Ibailu maftir maushi ala l'minyan shiva. Okay. Maftir. Okay, we know that at the conclusion of laning on Shabbos, so now we're going to read a section of Navi. Okay. When did this start exactly? Up for a debate amongst the Rishonim already. When exactly this practice started? But the Gemara right now is just assuming we have this practice. Ada Yom Hazeh, we have this practice where we read from the Navi. We also know that we don't just simply go transition from Chumash to Navi, but basically there's a bridge. What's that bridge? The bridge is Maftir. Maftir basically segues us from the Chumash to the Haftorah. So now the question on the table is as follows: Maftir is another Aliyah. Anyone who's in the Gabbai business, you know that on Shabbos it's not seven aliyahs, it's eight. You got to identify 8 people to get an aliyah, because you know that someone's going to get maftir. So now the question is very simple. Does maftir count towards one of the aliyahs, or does it not count? Meaning, as we've just established from our Mishnah, from today's daf, you need on Shabbos 7 aliyahs. Okay. Can we do 6 and maftir? Or does it have to be 7 and maftir? So Rav Huna, Rav Yirmiyah, Bar Abba, Chan Amar Ola, V'Chan Amar Eina Ola. Okay, so it's a machlokas, whether it counts or whether it does not count. Man Damar Ola Da Kari. Now the one who says that it counts because we're reading. Now mind you, right, this is an interesting discussion. Tosos on the bottom has this discussion at greater length. I'm just gonna raise awareness, and that is the practice back then is not what it is now. What we do now for maftir, we repeat. Right? Unless there's another Sefer Torah that we have to read from. But if it's just one Sefer Torah, so for our maftir, we repeat. So from our perspective, if I asked you the question, is maftir count as one of the aliyahs or not? So intuitively, what you would have said to me is, I don't think so. We're not saying anything new. We're just repeating 3 psukim, 3 or a couple more than that, from the parsha that we just got done reading. So intuitively, our answer would be no. Back then, the practice was not to repeat from maftir, but to read more psukim. Okay, that's the Tosfos makes that point, and Tosfos says that it's got to be otherwise. Why doesn't the Gemara just simply say, "Well, you're repeating the psukim"? Of course, it's not going to count. So it used to be the practice that they would actually read from different psukim. So man damar ola hakari. So the one who says it counts is because, look, I'm reading psukim. Oman dami en ola. Now the one who says it does not count, I'll tell you why it doesn't count. Kedula damer ula mimne mahamafter benavi tzarech sheikar b'torah. Why does the mafter benavi have to read psukim from the Torah? Tchila mimne kavo Torah. Because kavo Torah, meaning it's not appropriate that after we just got done reading chumash, that someone's going to come up, be called up, and just read navi. Meaning it's a little bit of a slight to the Chumash. It's a little lack of cover for the Chumash, for the Torah. So therefore, what we'll have him do is, it's like I pointed out a moment ago, it's like a bridge. Basically, he'll read a little bit of Torah as to show cover to Torah, and then he'll read from the Navi. So that reading of the Torah is not fundamentally an obligation to read from the Torah. It's just to show cover to Torah. So therefore, it's not going to count. The Kevin the Mishum cover to Torah, who the Minyan Olosalek. So that's the Gemara's point, and therefore it will not count. So Meisvei, challenge on the part of the Gemara, I'm after Benavi lo yifchod mesrim ve'chab psukim. Now when you do the Haftarah, every Haftarah has to have minimally 21 psukim. Now I don't want to hear from anyone in this room that sometimes it's less than 21, because it happens to me, I know that as well. And the Gemara knows that as well, and the Gemara is going to ask that momentarily. But right now, just in terms of a number, right, the Gemara is going to throw out a number, 21. 21 psukim is what the Haftarah has to minimally be. And why? Keneged Shiva Shekaru B'Torah. Because look, there's 7 aliyahs, and we know an aliyah by definition, by minimum, is 3 psukim. So 3 times 7, 21. So for the Haftarah, so Haftarah needs to be 21 psukim. V'imisas v'mvar b'ahavyan. So the Gemara says, now if Maftir were to count, so then it shouldn't be 7 times 3, it should be 8 times 3. Because Maftir should count as another aliyah. And we're not counting it. So the Gemara says, "Kevin the Mishum Kavod Torah Hu Kenegdo Nami Lo Bayi." So the Gemara says, "No, I'll tell you what. We're not going to do 8 times 3. We're only going to do 7 times 3 because that 8th Ola is just for Kavod Torah. It's not for the Chovas Kriya, and so that's why we're not going to count that towards the Haftarah. Maskev La Rav. Okay, good. So basically, again, the question the Gemara just dealt with was whether or not the maftir can be counted, and the Gemara's conclusion is the maftir cannot be counted. Also, by the way, just one other point that Tosfos raises over here, we have a practice nowadays that what do we do before the maftir? Kaddish, right? Tosfos says that's also a development in the davening, where the Kaddish basically is there to make a separation between the Torah and the Haftarah. In other words, we're distinguishing between Torah and Navi. So we have that Kaddish. Yeah.
Right.
It's not that the Rishonim discussed that in terms of when exactly Haftarah comes about and why exactly Haftarah comes about. But in the Gemara itself, it's not mentioned. The Gemara doesn't give us that. Understood. But they had a Masorah. They had some sort of Masorah. but it's not brought up in the actual Gemara itself. Okay, Maskev LaRava. Now the question which I told you not to ask me because it's coming up in the Gemara is that there are a number of haftorahs which are less than 21 psukim. In fact, in the weeks coming up ahead, right? We are now in the 3 weeks leading up to Tisha B'Av. That's Gimel de Paranusa, meaning we say haftorahs that have nothing to do with the parsha, but have to do with calamity and destruction. Right, that's what we've been doing the last three Shabbos, them going up to Tisha B'Av, and then post Tisha B'Av, right, starting with this coming Shabbos Nachamu, and then for the next six Shabbosim after that, Shiva de Nechemta, seven haftorahs that have nothing to do with the parsha, but just simply are words of comforting us for the loss of the Beis Hamikdash. You're going to see over these next weeks some of the haftorahs are unbelievably short. Kiseitse. I'm not good at this. Stuart is excellent with this. I'm not. But Kiseitse, you're going to see the haftorah over there. You blink and it's gone. So but the Gemara here points out there are a number of haftorahs that are less than 21 psukim. And what happened to your rule that the haftorah has got to be 21? So Maskev LaRavarare Olosechem Safalu Havyan Esven V'Chad V'Karinan. So the haftorah for Parshat Tzav, right? We read from the seventh parak of Yirmiyahu. So there, it's less than 21 psukim. So Shani Aslam the Salakin Yana. So the Gemara says, yeah, but topic is covered. Topic is finished. Don't ask me, I'm not holding in Yirmiyahu. But in other words, you'll see that if you look at the Haftarah in context, you will see that basically the topic is done. And so therefore, once we're done with the topic, so we're finished, even if it doesn't meet the 21. You'll remember, we made this point earlier, Tosus makes this point earlier, and that is that even though the Gemara says, and we're going to see this either today or tomorrow, that you need at least 10 psukim. Right? We already saw this. You need 10 psukim for your three aliyahs. There is a time over the course of the year where we read only 9 psukim. Okay, and that would be, good trivia, when do we read only 9 psukim? Amalek. Right? I'm not talking about Parsha Zachor. I'm talking about Purim. On Purim, we read the Parsha Vayavol Amalek, which is at the end of Parshas B'Shalach. How many psukim is that? 9 psukim. So Tosfos over there says, what do you mean? We're only reading 9 psukim. There's a requirement to read 10 psukim. So Tosfos says, just like our Gemara says over here, Salkin Yana. Yeah, but the topic is over. If we're reading from an entire unit and the topic is over, that's it. So we don't add on psukim. Vehecha, back to the Gemara. Vehecha go Salkin Yana lo, v'amar ha-shmo bar, v'ab ha-zim and segin ha-vekam ne-kam de Rav Yochan v'chevekar and asur psukim amalan avstiku. So the Gemara points out that we were in front of Rav Yochanan many times. 10 psukim were read from the Haftarah, and Rav Yochanan says, okay, that's enough. 10 psukim is enough. So the Gemara, and he testifies, this happened many times. Okay, 10 psukim being enough. So the Gemara says, Makom Sheish Torgam Shani. So the Gemara says, yeah, but there, when they were reading from the Haftarah, there was a Torgamon. There was a translator. And because there was a translator, so therefore, for every pasuk, basically double. So 10 really becomes 20. Now I know they were shooting for 21, but basically the idea is that's a lot. You take a look at Rashi over here. Malcolm Sheish Torgam and Shani, it's the last Rashi before the Mishnah. Sheish Tarech Litzibor. Tircha Litzibora. Meaning now that we're having a Haftarah with every Pasuk, we're also going to have a translation with that Pasuk as well. So more than 10 Psukim, so Rav Yochanan said that's enough. So basically, okay, what do you see from our Gemara over here? Tosus picks up on this Gemara right away. Top Tosus on this Amud. What do you see from our Gemara? Not everyone had a Torgamon. Some did and some didn't. Right? From the Mishnah, you didn't get that sense that this was an option. That you can or cannot have a Torgamon. From our Gemara over here, Rav Yochanan, with Rav Yochanan, the Gemara says, oh, Rav Yochanan lives in a place where there is a Torgamon. Sounds like it's optional whether or not you can have or do not have a Torgamon. Tosfos points out, this supports our minhag. Our minhag is we don't have a Torgamon. But Tosfos says, but at least you see in our Gemara that it was optional. Back to the Gemara. Coming to Rav Yochanan, Mechiyav HaKarina, Serbster, I'm sorry. Amalan Makom Sheish Torgamon Shani, did Nirav Tachlif Bashmoa, Loshana Alba Makom Sheish Torgamon, Alba Makom Sheish Torgamon Posek. If there's no Torgamon, so then 21 Pesukim. If there is a Torgamon, so you could stop him. From Rav Yochanan, it seems like after 10. Okay. Good. Adkan, next Mishnah. Ein Porsin Ashma. This next mission, let me just give a quick, a brief introduction. Basically, there are times in Halacha when you need a minyan. Okay, you need 10 men. And basically, what this mission is going to do is collect together all the areas in Halacha where 10 is the required number. So, Ein Porsin Ashma. Of course, the mission starts up with the most difficult of halachas. It's not a difficult halacha, just difficult to understand what we're actually talking about. This is what's called Paris al Shema. Paris al Shema, literally to spread over the Shema, or, as Rashi over here says, what does the word Paris mean? To split it. Right? Prusa means broken bread. Right? So, to split the Shema. What exactly is going on over here? I'll go through Rashi, and to be honest with you, even after reading Rashi, I don't fully understand what we're describing. So Rashi says, "Me and Abala Beis Knesses for Achir Shikara Tzibur Shema." So let's say you had a minion come to shul late. Okay, so it wasn't just one person coming late; it wasn't just two, 10 men coming to shul late, and the Shliach Tzibur already read Shema. So Omer Echad VaOmer Kaddish UBaruchu. So now, what did this group miss? So this group already missed Kaddish and already missed Baruchu. So what they're entitled to do, is just make a quick, I would call it minyan, but it's not even a minyan. I'll just read Rashi. So what they'll do quickly is they'll say kasha and they'll say baruchu because they missed it. They'll say the first bracha of kriya shema, which has in it a form of kedusha, and then they'll, I guess they'll, so to say, they'll catch up with the rest of the minyan. I'm not exactly sure. But certainly the idea is that to say kash, to say baruch hu, you need a minyan. For Rashi, the way it said, it sounds like you need 10 men who didn't hear anything yet. That's what it sounds like from Rashi. There is much more discussion on this line of Mishnah.
Why don't they just get their own minyan going? Why do they have to get
right. As I'm reading Rashi, I had the same question as you did. I don't fully understand why they don't just make their own minyan. What advantages they have to doing this? I'm not sure. I'm unclear. I'm being hopefully forthright about it. I guess that's it. Yeah. Okay. Right. Could be. I don't know. Okay, Ben. I'm with you. Ein Overin Lefnei Teva is just a description of davening for the Amud. Einosinus Kapehem Duchening. The Ein Karin B'Torah, the Torah, Ein Maftir Manavi, Haftorah. Ein Osim Mamad Umoshav, Mamad Umoshav. So that is the procedure of burial, where for burial, what they would do is they would escort the mace to the cemetery, and they would make stops along the way. Take a look at Rashi over here. Rashi gives a description. To a certain degree, we do this to this day. But perhaps not as pronounced as they did it back then. Rashi gives a description. I'm reading Rashi. Lameis kishanosin as lameis lekovro hayu yoshvin zayin pa'amim levakos etzameis. So as they were escorting the mace to the burial, so they would stop, sit. Rashi describes sit 7 distinct times, crying over the loss. Va'arotz lasof to yispot, and also gave people an opportunity to eulogize. So right. We do something like this nowadays by a graveside, a funeral, but back then it was more pronounced in this levaya, in this escorting of the mace to the funeral, to the cemetery, where 7 times we would sit, stop, sit, cry, and if somebody wanted to, an opportunity to eulogize during those 7 stops. And reading on in Rashi, V'hachitanya ein pochas mishiva ma'amadus moshavos lemeis kegon amdu yikarim amodu shuvu yikarim shuvu. And then they would make this pronouncement of my beloved one stand, my beloved one sit. In other words, it was part of the procedure of escorting the mace to the cemetery. And the Gemara says it needs to be done with 10. Why 10? The Gemara is going to ask that question. In Omer Birchas Avelim, the bracha of Avelim needs 10. What is the bracha of Avelim? I will identify that a little bit later this morning. Tanchume Avelim, Nichum Avelim, the comforting of the mourner. We are describing over here on the way back from the cemetery, so there were 2 rows that were created. 2 rows that are created, and for the first time he's now going to be an Avel, and he's going to be receiving Divrei Nechama, so you need 10 in order to create these 2 rows. Birchas Chasanim, and the bracha for a Chasan, meaning the special benching that we do for the Chasan, could be, well, I'll come back to that. The could be that's not what we're describing. Ein Mezamnim B'Shem, and also benching, using Shem Hashem. So all these things that we just described is you need 10. You cannot do it with less than 10. Uvekarkos tisha vekohen veadam kayarsabahem. And when it comes to appraisals of land, a land was dedicated to Hetish, and now in comes a group of people to appraise, the appraisers. So you need 10, 9 of whom are non-Kohanim, and one of them is going to be a Kohen. And the same thing is true when it comes to the appraisal of a man. What are we talking about? So stay tuned, because we're going to explain that a little bit better in just a moment. Okay, we need a minyan to daven, right? That's basically the first point of the Mishnah, to put it succinctly. And where does that come from? So here's a classic Gemara, and that this now gives us a source for a minyan. The pasuk says that I will be sanctified amongst Bnei Yisrael besoch. Davar shebekdusha needs to be, can be done in no less than 10, in a setting of 10. So my mashman, the Dibur Rabbi Chiya, the Gemara says, okay, but how did we get to the number 10? Asya toch toch. So the Gemara says we learn it through Gzeir Shava. So Ksiv Hachav Nikdash besoch Bnei Yisrael, it says in Parshas Emor, I will be sanctified in the midst of Bnei Yisrael. Ksiv Hashem, he balu mitoch ha'eda, separate yourself from the Eda. Fascinating. Where are we generating this halacha of 10? From the Meraglim. The Meraglim are 10. Rashi points out, Kalev and Yeshua were not, they're seeded from the Meraglim. So that leaves us with 10. So there are 10 Meraglim. So that's how we know that the Toch is a reference to 10. And I'm saying, Yibalu mitoch Eda, and Vasya Eda Eda, Ksiv Hasam, Ad Masai Eda La Rahazos, Malahala Nasaraf Kanasara. And the Eda, through another Gzereshava, tells us that it was 10. So it is fascinating that the source for a minyan is the Meraglim. Right?
Why not
Avram's
case with the Geborah, the 10 people?
I understood, but yeah, but I hear you.
Sure,
yeah.
Another, I hear somewhere else, I don't know where it was, they said that the 10 could also refer to Yaakov's 10 children meant to get Yosef. There were 10.
Right. Correct. Correct. I've heard that as well. Okay, I've heard that as well. That it's not in the Gemara. It's Rishonim bring it down. Our Gemara, let's just say it simply. Our Gemara cites the Meraglim as a source. Now remember, it's a Gzeir Shava, and once we're dealing with Gzeir Shava, I mean that's Kabbalah. It's a tradition. It is certainly interesting, and what to make of it, I'm not sure. That the Meraglim become the source when, especially as we're approaching Tisha B'Av, the Meraglim are not viewed favorably. Just I'm saying it nicely. So the so it is interesting and it's okay. Enos Amaman Moshe Pachus Me'asar. Next thing we're going to review in the Mishnah is this idea of stopping as we're walking the mace to the cemetery. Kevin Debala Me'mar Imdu Yikar Me'amudu Shuvu Yikar Me'shuvu Patsi Me'asar Lav Arachara. Why do I need a minion? So the Gemara's answer is it's not Derech Eretz to do a less than 10. Why? Because the practice was that they would say, Amdu Yikarim Amdu, Shivu Yikarim Shivu. Right? Let's stop. And he speaks to the Yikarim, to my beloved, my right, those who are assembled, and Shivu and sit. And as Rashi points out, once you're saying the word Yikarim, so we don't, I mean, I know we sometimes use hyperbole, but we don't like to exaggerate in hyperbole. And if we're saying the word Yikarim, you need a group of people there. And a group, Derech Eretz, you should have 10. Not should have 10, but in order to go through this procedure, you need 10. Ein omrim Birchas Aveilim, Birchas Hasanim, my Birchas Aveilim. What are we talking about when we say Birchas Aveilim? So Birchas Rachva. So the Gemara gives just a very succinct definition, and that is the bracha in the street. Amar Yisrael, Amar Yochanan, Birchas Aveilim, Basar, Vein Aveilim, and Aminyan. So the Gemara doesn't really flesh it out in terms of what we're talking about over here. So if you take a look at Rashi right here, so Rashi over here writes that we're speaking about the bracha that was given, we're not talking about benching. Okay, we're going to see together in Moed Katan, shortly enough, that in the Beis Avo, there's a special benching for the Beis Avo. Okay, it happens to have fell into disuse. It's one of those funny areas of halacha where the Gemara is pretty clear of what to do, and for reasons which are slightly inexplicable, we don't do it anymore. So it comes up a couple times in Avelis, one of them being benching. There is a special benching that is mentioned in the Beis Avo. Truth of the matter is, we already saw back in Brachos. In the seventh parak of Brachos, the Gemara there went through the special benching on the base oval. But the Gemara over here, that's not what the Gemara is talking about over here. So says Rashi. Rashi says what the Gemara is talking about over here is that while they're walking away from the cemetery and while giving words of comfort now to the mourner, so they would have brachas that they would give to each other. There would be a special bracha that the Ava would say to the Menachemim, to those giving the comfort, and there was a bracha that the Menachem said to the one who is receiving the comfort. So brachas would be given to back and forth, and again, the point of the Gemara is that you need 10 in order to exchange these brachas. And in terms of a minyan, for this bracha, the Ava doesn't count, for a very simple reason, because he's the recipient of the bracha. So therefore, when counting towards this minyan, you look at the Menachemim and only the Menachemim. Birchas chasanim ba'asara and chasanim in a minyan. Now the birchas chasanim. So presumably we're talking about Sheva brachas, presumably. And there you can count the chasan as one of the minyan. So usually for Sheva brachas there are more than 10, although by the end of the week already, you're right. It's a bit of a struggle. You need 10, but the chasan counts as one of the 10. Eimazamna l'mazim b'shem pachas me'asara. Now, when benching and adding a Kadosh Baruch Hu's name into the Zimun, you need 10. Came into Be'el Ameimah, Nevarech Lalokeinu, Batsi Masar, Lav Arachara. And the Gemara says over here, the same Gemara we saw back in Brachos and in the 7th Perek, less than 10, it's not Derech Eretz to say Shem Hashem, so therefore, you need 10 in order to say Shem Hashem. V'hakarkos tishav ha'kon adam kayos ha'bam, nani mili. Appraisals. Right, you just dedicate your land to the base of Mikdash. And now, if somebody wants to come and buy the land out of this, it's not out of foreclosure, but it's out of the property of Hekdesh. So a proper appraisal is done. So, and the appraisal is done with 10, and how do I know that? I'm a Shmuel, Asar Kohanim Tzuvim B'Parsha. So if you look in the Parsha, in Parsha's Bahar, so you will see that in terms of the redemption of the land, Kohen is mentioned 10 times. So Chad L'Gufei, V'idach, right, Chad L'Gufei, so one of those terms Kohanim tells me, it needs to be a Kohen. And then V'idach HaVemir HaChamir, V'emir HaChamir, Ela L'Rabos. So Tisha Yisraelim. Every other time it says Kohen, what is that called? It's called a Mir HaChamir. And in the methodology, in the Midah, Yigim HaMidah Shatarni Joshua's Baham, whenever we have Mir HaChamir, it comes to include, not exclude. So the next time it says Kohen, it means a non-Kohen. The first time it means Kohen, to the exclusion of Yisrael, and the next time it's a non-Kohen. So the Gemara says, sorry, L'Rabbah Tisha Yisrael Mechad Kohen. Ve'im ha'chamisha Kohenim ha'chamisha Yisraelim. So the Gemara says, well, wait a second. Why don't you argue like this? It says Kohen the first time, that's a Kohen. It says Kohen a second time, that's a non-Kohen, because it's Mir Rachamir. It says Kohen the next time, so that should identify just a Kohen. And if you keep alternating in that fashion, so what you should be arriving at is 5 Kohanim, 5 non-Kohanim. Why don't we expound the pasuk that way? Kashya, the Gemara says, you know what? Admission, that's difficult. But as we said many times before, the word kashya just simply means it's a difficulty, it's not going to change the halacha, and if we put our heads to it, we can think of an answer. As just off the cuff, which I should never do, but off the cuff, one could maybe suggest that each additional Kohen is going back on the original, and it's Mir Achar Mir on the original. Okay. Adam Kayos Abem, Adam Mikadosh, the Gemara says, a person has sanctity where we're appraising the value of a person in order to deconsecrate him. I'm Rabbi Abba, Ba'om Adamei Alai. So the Gemara says, yeah. In other words, right, if you make a neder, and what do you pledge to the base of Mikdash? I want to give my value. Not Erech, because Erech is a fixed value, but Demei. In other words, however I'm sold on the market. We're going back to a time where there was Avadim, there were slaves, and so there was a market and there was a way to appraise your value. So if you say Demei Alai, I'd like to give my value to the base of Mikdash. So Detanya Amar Demei Alai Shamina So Ke'evet. So how you appraise? You're appraised like an Evet. And we know that in the world of halacha, Eved Dich Kishla Karka, that Eved has the same status of Karka. We're going to see this when we get to Nashim and Nezikim. We're going to see this many times over. So Dichsiv Istachtam Osam of Nechem Acharem LaResha Sechuzah. So now that you are going to be appraised like an Eved, and an Eved has the same status of a Karka, so therefore your appraisal has to be done with 10, one of the 10 being a Kohen. Okay, we'll stop over here tomorrow, pick it up from the Mishnah.